The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
Howard Feldman. Always splendid and happy when I talk to you.
Likewise. It's a very, very tense day here in South Africa, I must tell you. All of us sitting very much on the edge of our seats as we are waiting to hear. Just so you know, voting is underway. The members of parliament one by one are being called up, and they are collecting their ballot papers. They are walking to the booths and deciding which way they want to go. Very, very interesting. Couple of people calling do the right thing as they do that, and let's hope they do.
Well, I have to say that even we here in Israel are sitting on spilkers. So as soon as results are in, please let me know so that I can put people here. I can calm their frazzled nerves.
Well, as I said a little bit earlier, the fact is that I do think we have to celebrate the fact that we live in a democracy and that this is able to take place through a democratic process. I think that is something we shouldn't take for granted. Many countries in the world, this would never, ever happen, and I do think we need to be grateful for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what? At the end of the day, this is why everybody in South Africa is fighting so hard to preserve the sacred democratic tenets.
Absolutely right. As is happening in Israel at the moment, the Attorney General to indict Sarah Netanyahu.
Well, we spoke yesterday about a possible criminal indictment against Bibi Netanyahu, but now the Attorney General, Avichai Mandelbrot, has decided he will indict the Prime Minister's wife for diverting public money for private use. So she is suspected of fraud and breach of trust relating to the misuse of public funds. So basically what this means is that she's been using our taxpayer or hard-earned money to meet her private housekeeping expenses. Yeah. And she's estimated, because she's been charged on four counts of felony, and she is suspected to have cost hundreds of thousands of shekels in state funds. So apparently what she has done, or allegedly, is she is suspected of privately employing an electrician who did not win a tender to cover his work expenses. The second is improper use of state funds for her late father's medical care. The third is purchasing garden furniture for the Prime Minister's residence, but then moving it to their private residence in Kaisaria. And the fourth is exaggerating meal expenses at the Prime Minister's residence. And I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, the Prime Minister was under a lot of criticism for running up an exorbitant bill for ice cream. The state comptroller wanted to know why our Prime Minister was spending 10,000 shekels on ice cream. One of the reasons given was because, you know, for hosting state functions. But what was suspicious was that it was mostly for pistachio-flavored ice cream.
Really, huh? So that's good to know, I guess.
It's interesting to know that the Prime Minister favors pistachio ice cream and he wants to make sure that he has the budget to cover his cravings.
That's crazy. What's the view of this? Is it being taken very seriously in Israel?
Well, it is quite serious when the Attorney General wants to indict them, or at least indict Sarah Netanyahu. So the Prime Minister has responded, and he says that Yair Netanyahu is vegetarian. Avner and Mrs. Netanyahu never eat meat or barely eat meat, and the Prime Minister does not consume food worth thousands of shekels from a steakhouse. So they are saying that it's the housekeeper has inflated these figures because they suspect that 11,000 shekels worth of food was ordered to the Prime Minister's residence, even though the receipts say food was intended for the Prime Minister's office. I mean, I know that food is a very serious thing in Israel, but this is how serious any kind of breach in public funding is taken.
What's interesting to me is obviously this is a very serious thing, and I don't mean to be flippant about it, but when we consider what's gone on in South Africa with our presidential family exporting billions upon billions of rands out of South Africa, and we hear that in Israel this is about an electrician who didn't go through who didn't go through a tender process, and perhaps buying too much meat for the household, it almost seems silly.
Well, Howard, I can't resist saying it. You can't hold an candle to it.
Yeah, you certainly can't. That's actually very good. I like that. And I get it.
And I
get it, that it's the almost the broken window pane theory, that you can't allow. Certainly the highest position in the land could not be allowed to get away with anything that even has a whiff of corruption or of utilizing public funds for the wrong reasons. But is there an element of witch hunt, or is this a genuine real concern? I would think that if the AG is getting involved, it is real.
Look, I think there's an element of both. I think that there is an element of some kind of witch hunt, because they do seem to be hell-bent on making an example of the Prime Minister's family. We've seen a lot of it in the media lately. We saw last week one of Netanyahu's sons having a go at the sons of Olmert and
And then there was
the
story that the one son didn't clean up after the dog. For goodness sake.
Yeah, so things are,
that's just
petty
silliness.
Things are coming into the public domain. And, you know, I agree with you. When one looks at some of the issues of corruption around the world, there are much bigger issues than how much meat and ice cream you consume.
I think for most
Israelis, the issue would be public funds given to or used for Sarah Netanyahu's late father's medical care.
I think so.
There we see
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And perhaps that the submarine investigation into Netanyahu himself. Those are real things, but there does seem to be a bit of a campaign, and to me that's almost links back to what I was suggesting. I think it was yesterday where I said that there's the sense that people have had enough of this couple, and they're saying, right, now it's time to move on. What concerns me is that you shoot yourself in the foot by attacking them on so-called corruption charges, when really all this is about a bit of diversion away from what some of the very, very real issues that need to be dealt with in Israel.
Yeah, and let's not kid. Israel is not short of issues to deal with, and one of that's with a country that we have a key peace agreement with, and that is Jordan. Mm. The king of Jordan, King Abdullah, was in the region yesterday. He visited the West Bank, and it sent a message not just to Israel, it sent a message to Egypt, and it sent a message to his constituency. And to me, this is a much bigger problem than whether or not Sarah Netanyahu used the wrong electrician.
What is the story with King Abdullah's visit to the West Bank? What does this mean?
Okay, well, first of all, let's put it in context. The king has not visited the West Bank very, very often. In fact, he's only been here, I think it's 6 times during his reign. And he's only visited Israel twice.
Well, I mean, let's not forget he did lose it in 1967, so it must be a bit embarrassing for him.
But, you know, because we have this historical peace agreement, so by him visiting Ramallah and not coming to Israel, kind of cocked a snoot at the Israeli government. And it is very, very symbolic, because we are just coming out of a major crisis with regards to the Temple Mount, and also the issue with the Israeli embassy in Jordan. And Some say that it was felt that it was not the right time to come to Israel. And one pundit even said it was like having two dinner invitations but only accepting one, leaving the other party intentionally insulted. But it also sent a message with regards to the internecine fighting between Hamas and Fatah, that he's coming out very, very firmly in support of Fatah. And this also sends a message to Egypt, because Egypt are in touch with Abbas's biggest rival, Mohammed Dahlan. And this also comes at a time where Mahmoud Abbas, or Abu Mazen as he's called here, is taking steps to stop the supply of electricity to Gaza and the payment of salaries. So this has sent a message basically to the whole region. And you know, we're taking very, very careful note. Also, we cannot forget that the Temple Mount is still administered by the Waqf, a Muslim religious trust whose members are appointed and paid by the PA. So I would imagine that that also had something to do with the king's visit to Ramallah.
Yeah, very, very interesting indeed, but certainly doesn't help to calm the waters in the region. Terribly sad story yesterday. A pilot killed in training, in a training exercise, 43-year-old Major David Zohar. What do we know about the story?
This is a terrible, terrible tragedy. He was killed during a training exercise yesterday. He's 43 years old. He was a major in the Air Force, and he was the grandson of Franya Goldhar, who was a survivor of Auschwitz. And when she used to give her lectures, she used to speak about how having a grandson in the Air Force was the ultimate revenge on the Nazis. So investigation is happening as we speak as to why the helicopter crashed. It was an Apache, and it was an A model Apache helicopter from the Israeli Air Force's Magic Touch Squadron, and it encountered a technical malfunction, and we heartbreakingly lost David Zohar, Zichron Levracha, and another pilot is in critical condition. So the pilots reported the malfunction to the control tower and tried to continue to land, but the helicopter crashed between the two runways on the base. And some say that it could have been a crack in the posterior rotor blade of one of the helicopters, but the Air Force is still investigating as to what happened.
Terribly sad story indeed. Finally, the UN chief says serious war crimes investigation must go on despite investigators' resignation. Well, I would hope so.
This is a very, very important story, and I'm actually quite saddened that it's not making big enough news around the world. But then again, it doesn't really involve Israel and any dodgy dealings that we are always suspected of doing. This is very, very important because Carla Del Ponte, who was the chief investigator into war crimes committed in Syria, has quit. She says that there doesn't seem to be anything tangible being done on the ground. I think she has quit in extreme frustration, and also probably to draw attention to the fact that this ongoing investigation doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And she said that there's a lack of follow-up action from the UN Security Council. There have been dozens of reports on serious human rights abuses and war crimes during this conflict, which is going on for 6 years now. And she says that she is quitting in protest because of the importance of accountability for crimes against civilians during the conflict. And the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, who will be in Israel later this month, says that he regrets her decision, and he says it's so important that this investigation continues. But, you know, to me, it's important on two levels. It's important because something needs to be done about Syria. This world cannot continue to be silent to the atrocities happening in Syria like it has been silent for so many genocides. And the other is that you can be sure that if there was some kind of investigation into Israel, and the territories. This would be happening. Nobody quits. Every complaint is followed up and accountability and action taken. So to me, it exposes a horrible double standard as well that Syrian lives are not as important as other lives.
But I was just
going to
say, isn't
the
saddest part about the whole story that that the fact that hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Syrians have been killed in this war, where there's been chemical warfare used, where millions of people have been displaced, doesn't seem to bother anybody.
And like him or loathe him, we have to say kol hakavod to President Trump for bombing the areas that were firing these, firing sarin gas into civilian, territories.
Absolutely right. Rolene, before I leave you, Neil asking, hi Howard, can you ask Rolene how many people were injured in Israel when the floor caved in at a nightclub? I think it might have been a wedding, not a nightclub, that Neil is referring to. I'm not sure why he's asking the question now, because if I recall, this happened a number of years ago.
Well, if this is the case, and Neil, I got your back because I did some research.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this happened in May 2001 during the wedding of Keren and Asaf Dror, and it was at the Versailles Wedding Hall in Talpiot in Jerusalem, and a large portion of the floor collapsed. And this was, this building was four stories tall, and as a result, 23 people died.
They
fell to their deaths through two stories, including the groom's 80-year-old grandmother and his 3-year-old second cousin, who was the youngest victim. Another 380 were injured, including the bride, who suffered serious pelvic injuries that required surgery. So this is the second worst disaster that happened in Israel, and it shocked Israelis, not just because it was one of the worst building disasters in the country's history, but also because for the first time, this kind of event was documented on a camcorder and broadcast on local and international TV. And we can thank our incredible Home Front Command Search and Rescue Unit, the elite Yachza Reserve Unit, for coming in and trying to save and recover as many people as possible.
And that was in 2000.
So, Neil, I hope that answers your question.
Well, I'm pretty sure it does. Neil, let us know why you were asking the question of Rolene. Has something come up that is relevant to that? In the meantime, Rolene Marks, you have a fantastic, fantastic day, and we will certainly chat to you. Time is 5:28, and that is the Israel Report brought to you by the Blue Agency. Darren Bergman sending me a WhatsApp. He's speaking to me from Parliament. He says, "Hi Howard, you are not getting an answer before the end of the show." That's pretty clear, because voting is still underway, and it's a very, very laborious process. But the good thing is that it gives the ANC members of Parliament a little bit of time to catch up on their much needed rest.